We have time, 10 minutes, for even less, for some questions, discussion, if there are other. Yes.
Yeah, thank you. So a few comments on the previous presentation. First, on the issue of dose adjustment, of dose tailoring, it's little sobering for those of us who thought that with the new anticoagulants, then you didn't need to monitor the dose, or that will be the basic advantage compared to warfarin. So we may still not be there, and that shows there's still a lot we don't know about the mechanism of those drugs that we need to find out. Second, about the long-term benefit risk of those drugs, it is clear from all the trials that there's a clear advantage in terms of serious or fatal hemorrhagic events. However, in the context of long-term use, like for AF in real life, there are case reports now from emergency room physicians or orthopedists of increased incidence of fatal events of patients who show to these patients where they have faced with hemorrhagic events they cannot do anything about. So I think we need, beyond the phase 3 trials, to have monitoring of the use of this drug to see if this is really real and what we can do about it. And the third comment related to the fact that there are different perceptions in the Japanese population of the benefit risk of those medications related to bleeding or others. I think it's not only based on ethnicity, but in individual patients in the same population, you or me may have a different perception of the relative risk-benefit of some repeated minor or relatively minor bleedings versus possible risk of TIA. And I think we need to become more sophisticated in our trial in terms of having better outcomes, incorporating patient perception of this benefit risk.
Thank you. Great comments. Peter, you want to?
This is not about what has been said now, but about it's more about selection of the patients, I think, which has been addressed by, I think, in particular, Dr. Simons and Dr. Kogler. I think that's a very important subject. I mean, the emphasis today has been on the dose response, but I think the selection of the patient, I think, is also very important, also from a regulatory point of view. And the issue where we are struggling with at the moment is whether in the SPCs, in the summary of the product characteristics, we should make a distinction between the various indications, meaning that patients, for instance, for AF, should they have different contraindications than patients for prevention of high-risk surgery. And well, that's an urgent issue at the moment, whether that should be the same or whether we should make a distinction and going for putting the standards higher or lower depending on the indication. And I was wondering whether somebody in the panel would like to comment on that. I don't know, in the trials itself, I think the contraindications and the exclusion criteria are always more or less the same, but shouldn't we be a little bit more distinctive and by doing that, choosing more better the right patients? That's my question.
So who would like to answer? We have a couple.
May I comment on that? I agree with Yves and with Peter that, of course, outside trials, we should see whether these eight new agents are better in stroke prevention, but especially the safety issue is important. And there are two big registries now for AFib, Garfield and Gloria, and they will address in the real-world population the benefits and harms of warfarin, which still, of course, by far the most used anticoagulant, and the newer agents, where they are really better and that their safety is really better than with warfarin. And the incidents which have been reported with dabigatran especially, of course, people bleed to death with dabigatran, but remember how many patients will bleed to death with warfarin, and those are not so much reported because it's an act of God. If you die or bleed with warfarin, and if you bleed to death with dabigatran, it's an act of dabigatran. So you have to be very careful, I think. So the registries will give the final answer, not the trials. Although there is now 4-year data from the RELY trial, but it's still selected patients, as Peter pointed out, selected patients from the RELY trial who continued their allocated treatment with dabigatran. So the registries will give the answer, I think.
Craig, should we make a distinction in contraindications, warnings, interactions between the various indications in terms of summary of product characteristics? I mean, that's where it starts, I think.
I think you should.
Fayez?
Yes, Angelus mentioned modeling and simulation. We haven't talked about that so much, and it appears to me that this is a typical situation with varying doses, varying indication, varying patient profiles, so many factors in the equation that potentially it seemed, at least from a first sight, that it is attractive to have simulation and modeling. I don't know whether there are any experts in this area here and whether Nancy will have some views on that. On the other hand, I doubt that regulatory people would rely on any simulation or in silico modeling, but it may help in the very early stages in dose finding. Maybe Nancy will have comment on that.
I think it can help in complex situations. I think many people simulate when there is a theoretical answer. So simulation is a tool. One should be sure the problem's not solved theoretically. But even when it is solved theoretically, it may be that the results are true for very large sample sizes, and you really want to see how a procedure works in the kind of sample sizes you're going to be using. So I think it's a very useful tool. And some of the industry, Pfizer, I know, does this quite extensively.
Thanks, Nancy. We have Yarsa and Roxana Marin.
Yeah, it's only one comment,
basically. Brief comments, and then yeah, I think we move on to the final part about heart failure.
Yeah, it means modeling and simulation.
And Sven Wasserman, sorry.
Okay. Modeling and simulation is a very good methodological tool, but this implies that you start off something, so you need really to have data, and very often large amount of data, and if you want to simulate for efficacy and safety, you need to have completed confirmatory trials, and then you can simulate in order to get doses for eventually other indication or other population. But means this is not really something that you can use widely as a dose selection at the start of the program, unless you simulate, for instance, PKPD. So
I like simulation and I like personalized medicine, but at the end of the day, even the registries aren't going to answer these questions that we absolutely need to know, Frank. What we need, which we won't get, but we need, is comparative effectiveness among in specific population amongst these new anticoagulants. And I think that's really where the limitations are. What we're trying to do is to grab data from different sources and try to come up with conclusion of what drug fits which patient for which indication and at what dose, when we actually haven't comparatively, haven't compared them in a prospective way.
But I disagree with you. For instance, the ACS registries are very helpful. GRACE, CRUSADE, REACH. These are very important registries. We learned a lot about the newer antiplatelet drugs, the newer anticoagulants in ACS, I mean. So we need those registries. But I agree with you, there are not randomized comparisons, but that's the strength of a registry, that there is no randomization, that it is, of course you can, I think you can compare patients who continue on warfarin, even in the era of NOACs, and those who get the NOACs from their doctors. Of course it is not randomized, but I think you can get an impression,
and just,
in my view.
Yeah, I agree with you, but we cannot all agree, but some of these registries you refer to were voluntary. Registries. Now these phase four programs, and I guess were required by the authorities. So it's a different situation with the NOACs.
A country, my friend, which is a communist country, because all patients are in your government registry, where you have these beautiful publications about everything in cardiology, drug prescription, mortality, hospitalization, and the same is true for Sweden. That is fantastic, and it is not industry sponsored. It's just the government. He was the only payer. Right? The hospitals don't get their money if they don't hand over their yearly results. I'm very pleased by the Sweetheart. Do you know the Sweetheart registry, which we get the report each year of? Very interesting. 100% complete.
I agree. One correction, you know, that we're mostly social democrats. And when Ronald Reagan was asked, in the past, he says, but the Swedish prime minister is not a communist. He's a social democrat. Ronald Reagan answered, I don't care what kind of communist he is. So, okay, I'm a communist, but let's move forward. Sven Wassmann, and then we have Yuki Ando. Yeah. Then we really have to move on to the next session. So please, no more fingers pointing at the chairman asking for comments.
I just have one more point to add to the complexity of this, and this is the comorbidities. I mean, we have trials for ACS, we have trials for AFib, but obviously we have a great number of patients with AFib and coronary artery disease. So we do have the question of antiplatelet treatment for stents and for antiplatelet treatment for ACS together with AFib, and we have zero data on that. So I do agree that we need to have some other sources to get data to get more safety, because there's a clinical need to decide, and this is what doctors do. Like you said, they pick from here to there, and they think, oh, maybe I combine this antiplatelet with this new anticoagulant in this dose. We have no data for this. So I do think we need trials to address this, and obviously we need something like registries to have a little bit more safety on how to decide for our patients.
Sure. I think you were first, and then last comment from Dr. Ando.
Just a comment about the ethnic differences in the risk of bleeding, and I find quite interesting regarding, for example, the Japanese population. And I wonder if it is really ethnic differences or only related to weight, because you know that the Japanese, they have a smaller weight than the rest of the population in the world. And in that case, why don't you apply that to all the small weight population around the world, even if they're not Japanese? And it's quite interesting to see that we have antithrombotics where weight is considered for the determination of the dose and others not. So if you apply the weight adjustment dose, would be that actually decline the frequency of bleeding risk?
It's not only the weight. It's only the polymorphisms, the genetic polymorphism. There are papers on it.
Okay. Last comment in this session, and then we move on.
Yeah, I'd like to just comment on the adaptive design from the Japanese regulatory viewpoint. So we haven't had the guidance document for adaptive design so far, but we have actually many experience in our consultation meeting. So we have experience to accept the exploratory adaptive design, such as the adaptive dose ranging. And we basically, the adaptive design is the efficient for the exploratory phase, but sometimes we see the failed cases. So in such case, we are not sure the reason of failure is the design, or just drug is just ineffective. And we have big discussion for the confirmatory trial with adaptive design. So still we have a big discussion. And there is issue of pulling results from the different stages of the clinical trials and errors and bias in the implementation of the clinical trials. There are actually one case of consultation meeting in this area. We have one case of the consultation meeting in this area, so antithrombosis. And so the company proposed the so-called phase 2-3 trials for that anticoagulant agent, I believe. So we decide that to recommend the separate phase 2 and phase 3 because their information is not sufficient for planning the clinical trial with confirmatory aspects. And actually, we think there is a possibility to come back to the dropped dose when we review the recommended dose in the regulatory new drug review. So in that case, I believe that they conduct the phase 2 trial and phase 3 trial. So we have still big discussion on the so confirmatory trial with adaptive design, but we basically have the positive opinion for using the adaptive design. So actually, we haven't had the guidance document for DMC so far, actually, but now we are drafting the guidance document for DMC in Japan also. So thank you.
Thank you for those insights from Japan. And with that, I would like to thank all the presenters and certainly all the discussants, the panel, for being so active. I hope this will continue. We have the same panel.